It's called soccer.
It's called football.
Soccer.
Football.
Domino's Best Deal Ever lets you get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99.
Okay, we can agree on that.
Yeah, fully.
So, pineapple?
Don't ruin it.
Get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99. Finally, something everyone can get behind.
And if the refs disagree, that's between them and Domino's. Which means the only thing left to fight over is who's ordering.
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6:15 to 7:26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings. 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's. Online or in Columbus at Polaris.
What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is Hidden Killers Half Year in Review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The night before Eric Richens died, Josh Grossman sent Corey a text. Josh is Corey's lover, boyfriend on the side, or side piece, if you will. He told her he wasn't feeling well. Said he'd sat down to eat that hush puppy thing. And the next thing he knew, it was 11 o'clock at night. Hours gone, vanished. He got sick and he didn't know why. He didn't ask too many questions. He was in love. The next day, Eric Richens, her husband, totally different guy, dead. After something he ate that involved Corey Richens. Coincidence? And there's also been some reporting that the boyfriend, Grossman's dog, even died. What the hell was that? A jury of eight people spent 3 hours reviewing 3 weeks of evidence and reached a conclusion against Corey Richens. Guilty. All five counts. Aggravated murder, attempted murder, insurance fraud, forgery. Unanimous. Corey Richens, 35-year-old mother of three, real estate agent, we put that in air quotes, and published author of children's grief book, or ghost author of, she's not really the author, she hired someone to write a grief book, lowered her head as the judge read the verdict. It took 3 hours. Not 3 days, not a week of agonizing deliberation. 3 hours to look at everything this woman did and said and searched and texted and forged and agree without a single holdout. There was only one explanation for all of it. That's not a close call. That's called a conclusion. Love to get your thoughts in the comment section as we work through this. The verdict in the trial of Corey Richens. Guilty. Always like to see a good narcissist go down, don't you? 42 prosecution witnesses testified over 3 weeks. The defense called zero. Gee, that was a good call there. Let's just do nothing. That'll work out. That'll help the client. Corey Richens chose not to take the stand in her own defense, so the jury was left with exactly what prosecutors put in front of them, a paper trail so thorough, so specific, so damningly sequential that the only remaining question was whether eight people could follow it to its logical end. They did in 3 hours. I bet if they didn't have dinner, they would have been done sooner. But they wanted to have a little bit of time to enjoy their Quiznos. Is yours toasted? Mine's not toasted. They did it toasted. What's wrong with these people? That right there, there's 5 minutes of deliberation over toasted subs. I have no idea if they had Quiznos or not. I'm just throwing that in there. But seriously, they had to eat. They were hungry. So take the hour of dinner out of the mix, and you'd probably get this done in less than 2 hours, really. They walked into that room when you see a 3-hour verdict, and they knew their answer walking in. There wasn't a lot of deliberating. There was a lot of, what do you guys think? Okay. I mean, we'll find out. We'll find out when the jurors actually talk. But 3 hours, nobody needed a hell of a lot of convincing. The evidence stood on its own. Let's go back to January 9th of 2022. Corey Richens texted Josh Grossman and asked him whether he's ever done drugs besides marijuana. How recently? She frames it casually. She's been watching a show about the opioid epidemic. She says it reminded her to ask, you know, like you just do randomly asking people that question after you watch documentaries about drug use. I do the same thing after I watch Breaking Bad, don't you? I walk up to everybody. You got any of the blue stuff? You doing that? Like what? Watch a lot of Breaking Bad. Then they saw a woman building a baseline, learning what her boyfriend had already been exposed to, figuring out what his system could handle. At the time, it probably seemed like an odd but harmless question. Looking at it now with everything that followed, it kind of reads like research. 5 weeks later, Valentine's Day, February 14th of 2022, Corey had made plans to spend the day with her boyfriend, Grossman. Instead, she made Eric a sandwich and sent it to him. Eric Richens broke out in hives. He blacked out. He texted his wife that he was thinking about going to the hospital. She told him to take a nap. Take a little nap, honey. Then she went silent for 2 hours and hung out with her boyfriend. Eric thought, you know, maybe she'd come home to help him. According to prosecutors, she was in Provo waiting for a cabinet contractor. He survived. He later joked to friends that Corey had tried to poison him on Valentine's Day. Thought it was kind of a funny story. Yeah, I got real sick after Corey dropped off that sandwich for me. Didn't see her much of the day, but, you know, she was the only Valentine she gave me might have made me sick. Funny story. It wasn't a funny story because then came March 3rd, the night before Eric died, and this is where the picture becomes something you can't unsee. According to more text messages entered into evidence at trial, Grossman told Corey that night that he wasn't feeling well. The day before Eric died, said he'd sat down to eat that hush puppy thing that she'd given him and didn't remember a thing until 11 p.m. Hours of his life gone. The boyfriend didn't understand what happened to him. He was texting the only person who did. Prosecutors and analysts who reviewed the evidence drew a specific conclusion from that sequence. She'd already attempted it on Eric in February. She may have used Grossman the night before to calibrate the dose to confirm it worked or didn't. This is a weird thought process here. I mean, this, I wonder in itself, could be attempted murder or I don't know what. Although we have talked about this on the show, there might not have been an attempt at all on Grossman's life. I know it's like, well, what do you mean by that? I mean, just handling the stuff. Did she handle it? And then handle something that he was going to eat and just the residue of it then affected him. I mean, it's kind of, you take a second to look at this and go, oh, why did it affect Corey? It was on her hands, right? Yes, but she didn't ingest it. There's a difference to the way the body will be affected by it. I would honestly be curious, though, to know if Corey herself had any sort of ill reaction in any way, shape, or form. Not obviously horrible enough to stop anything, but enough to go, maybe I should wear gloves next time. Because that really could be how Grossman got ill. Just the handling, We may have learned Corey doesn't wash her hands all that often, to be completely honest. That may be the lesson in this part of the story. Corey is not really as cleanly as we all think. Moscow Mule. Made for Eric the next day. The drink Eric got contained 5 times the lethal dose of fentanyl, not medical grade street fentanyl. The kind you have to go looking for. And she did, to her housekeeper, and she went to her friend. They got it. The Michael Jackson stuff. And I'm like, that's propofol. Yeah, I know, but Corey didn't know what the hell anything was called. Corey's not the brightest bulb, if you haven't caught on by this trial and her millions of dollars of debt and poor decision-making process. She's what you call colloquially a fucking idiot. I know it's a term that, reserved for the special ones. So sometime in early 2022, prosecutors say Corey contacted an acquaintance asking to purchase medication, telling her it was for an investor. When that source suggested hydrocodone, Corey allegedly asked for something stronger, something like the Michael Jackson drug. She knew what Michael Jackson died from, or that he died, basically. Something. Some drug. And that's what she wanted. She eventually got something. According to testimony through her housekeeper, Carmen Lauber, who purchased fentanyl pills through a street dealer, up to 90 of them. She needed something that would kill, and she knew enough to ask for it by reputation. Now look at the money, because that's what prosecutors say this was always about at its core. Corey Richens was $4.5 million in debt. Her real estate business was collapsing. She owed lenders more than $1.8 million and was being actively sued by a creditor. Eric's estate was worth over $4 million. She'd taken out multiple life insurance policies on him without his knowledge, totally nearly $2 million. And in the weeks before he died, she allegedly forged his signature on a new application for additional coverage. A handwriting expert testified at trial that Eric Richens did not sign that document. Here's the part that sharpens all of it. Eric knew something was wrong. In October 2020, a full year and a half before his death, he consulted a divorce attorney, then an estate planner. He restructured everything. He opened a living trust, placing his assets under his sister's control for the benefit of his 3 children. He transferred his business interest. He was systematically removing Corey from the equation. The window was closing. According to prosecutors, she knew it, so she closed it herself. The text messages didn't leave much room for interpretation. In December 21, she wrote to Grossman, "We both know this love triangle can't go on forever. You don't deserve it. I don't deserve you. I can't expect you to sit around for the day." The trigger gets pulled. The trigger. Her word, not a figure of speech. A countdown of sorts. Less than a month before Eric died, she asked Grossman if he'd marry her. Well, it was more like, if he could just go away and you could just be here, life would be so perfect. The week of Eric's death, she texted Grossman. "Can I try Friday? Give me a few days. Hang in there until, please. Until then, please." They had brunch plans for March 4th to get together. A celebration of her real estate closing was the plan. Well, that didn't happen. Not exactly. She celebrated with some other folks, not Grossman. Grossman testified he never once interpreted that as meaning Eric would be dead by then. He was in love. He wasn't thinking that, wait till Friday, give me a few days, hang in there until then, please, meant anything more than just, I'll see you Friday to celebrate the real estate deal. On the night of March 3rd, Grossman sent her an animated GIF image, a GIF, 2 people kissing, captioned, "Love you." She responded hours later, told him she hadn't had a second. She said she loved him, said she'd talk later. That same night, he told her about the hush puppies, about the hours he couldn't account for. She read that message. She knew exactly what it meant. She knew because she was the one allegedly giving him some food. We don't know a ton of details about this exchange, but again, weird. The next morning, Eric was dead. She texted Grossman two words, "Eric passed away, then talk later." She told him they thought it was an aneurysm. Very specific, very settled. Ready before the body was even cold. Here's what happened. It was an aneurysm. Nobody knows the answer to this question, but Corey did. Corey had answers. When Carmen Lauer, the housekeeper who procured the pills, called and said, "Please tell me those pills were not for him," Corey didn't flinch. No, they were not. Eric passed away from a brain aneurysm. Same answer, same words. The story was already locked. Her phone told investigators what she'd actually been thinking about. What is a lethal dose of fentanyl? Women, Utah prisons, luxury prisons for the rich in America. If someone is poisoned, what does it go down in the death certificate as? Can cops force you to lie to a lie detector test? She wasn't grieving. She was in damage control, and she started before anyone knew there was damage. The day after Eric died, she signed closing documents on a $2.9 million mansion. She had dreamed of owning property like that, she told Grossman. She grew up scrubbing toilets for rich people in Park City and swore she'd own one of those homes one day. She signed those papers while her husband's body was being examined. And then came the book. A children's picture book about loss, about a father with angel wings watching over his young son. She dedicated it to her amazing husband, the man this jury has now found she murdered. She appeared on local Utah television to promote it. Warm, composed, tearful in the right moments. Prosecutors noted at trial that text messages revealed she didn't even write the damn thing. A ghostwriter did. She performed the grief. She packaged it. She put her name on the cover and her dead husband's memory on the title page, and sold it to the public that had no idea they were looking at the aftermath of a calculated killing. And through all of it, every forged signature, every calibrated dose, every rehearsed lie, every television appearance, three little boys were just living their lives. They didn't know their father had been scared. They didn't know their mother had spent months acquiring the drug that would kill him. They didn't know that the woman who tucked them in had already tried it on Valentine's Day. That she'd been running tests. That she'd Googled what prison she might prefer if things went wrong. They were just kids. They just knew their dad died one morning and didn't come back. And then their mom got arrested. And then the cameras came. And they've been in guardianship ever since. Three boys have spent 4 years watching their last name become a headline. They lost their father because of what their mother did. Then they lost their mother to the consequences. Corey Richens didn't just kill Eric Richens. She detonated every stable, safe, ordinary thing those children had. And then wrote a book about the explosion, their grief. She literally tried to suck in the grief. The empathy of others that would be thinking about her children. She wanted that. She wanted that too. That's how much of a vampire this bitch is. She manufactured her own reality. She packaged their loss. She took it on television. She built a public identity out of the wreckage of a family. She destroyed on purpose. She made herself the victim. You think these people are like no one could possibly do that? Meet a borderline. Meet a narcissist to that nth degree. These people are capable of anything. There is no empathy. There is no feeling. There is just a motor that goes. And no walls to keep them in. They will go off the cliffs. They will destroy themselves. I always say this 1,000 times. You don't really have to do much when you're dealing with a borderline or someone with narcissistic personality disorder. Okay, we can't diagnose her. We don't know what she has. But if she is, if that's what she is, which I highly suspect, if you did diagnose her, you'd get something along those lines. That's my opinion, not a fact. So if we're looking at her just as resembling those personality types, let this be the lesson to be learned. You don't have to do anything to have them destroy their world. They will do it on their own. Just sit back and relax and don't get in the way. and make sure you're not part of their destruction process. I mean, get out of the way. Get out of the way. That's the lesson for anybody with that type of personality in or around them. Get the F out of the way, because you're not going to do anything by standing in front of them. It's like standing in front of an F5 tornado going, hey, God, stop. We don't want the wind here. It's no go when the tornado just plows through you and you die. You can watch the radar all you want and see the storm coming. That's what so many of us do. Well, if I just know more, if I just educated on this better, I'll be able to handle it. Yeah, if the tornado comes, the best you can do is get in the lowest place possible. Standing out in front of it, trying to reason with it, trying to tell it to stop, ain't going to stop it. It ain't going to stop a borderline, and it's not going to stop a narcissist. You will get hurt. So get out of the way and let it do its thing and watch it dissipate and disappear into the ether, because that's what will happen. It may stick around for a while. It may cause more chaos. But eventually, if you don't feed it, if the atmosphere changes, if it's no longer conducive to that storm system moves on. It needs something to feed on. And if you don't provide the correct atmospheric environment for it to thrive and live and feed off of like a thunderstorm does, it'll go. It'll find another place. It'll find a better atmosphere to produce chaos in. That's how you have to look at these freaking monsters, because that's exactly what they are. The housekeeper who sold her pills went on the stand. She said finding out Eric died of an overdose hit hard. She said she needed to step up and take accountability for her part. Carmen Lauber, a drug dealer, found more accountability in that moment than Corey Richens has shown at any point in 4 years. About 2 weeks after Eric died, Corey and Grossman drove up to the Utah mountains and talked for hours. At some point during that conversation, she asked him if he'd ever killed anyone while serving in Iraq. She asked him how it made him feel. Prosecutors told the jury she was working through her own feelings on the subject. It's called projection. Again, these people aren't that hard to read once you know what to look for. They ask obvious shit, thinking they're being really sneaky and really covert. She's looking for permission, maybe, or just for company in something she was carrying alone. The boyfriend, Grossman, was gutted on that witness stand, a grown man, head down, unable to look at his own text messages on the courtroom screen. He thought she loved him. He thought he was her future. He was, according to prosecutors, a tool she used, and looks like nearly a victim himself. Brad Bloodworth stood before the jury and told them, see through her facade, check her ambition, do not let her get away with murder. And then he went back in his casket. Mr. Bloodworth. They did. 8 people, 3 hours, 5 counts, guilty. Sentencing is now set for May 13th, so grab your popcorn. Aggravated murder in Utah carries a mandatory life sentence. The only remaining question is whether parole is possible. Given the premeditation, the repeated attempts, the forgery, the fraud, the calculated construction of a cover story before her husband was even cold, that's a difficult argument for any attorney to make with a straight face. But you know, Kathy Nestor, she's pulled other things out. The book is still out there. Her name is still on the cover. The dedication to her amazing husband is still on the inside pages. No verdict's going to change that. What a verdict can do is call it what it is. The night before Eric Richens died, she read a text from the man she claimed to love, telling her he'd lost hours. He couldn't explain. She knew what happened to him. She knew because she'd handed him food. She knew because she'd been working towards this for months. She read that message, sat down on her phone, and texted the next morning. The next morning, the next day, the next evening, she made her husband a drink. The jury saw it, and in 3 hours, it took the rest of us 4 years. Your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube and Substack. Love for you to weigh in. We have more on Corey throughout the week as we take a deeper dive and really take a look through the prism now of just, she did this all of her actions, what they all mean. We've been looking at it from a prism of if. Now it is. And it's a dark, dark place to travel. Join us, shall you? Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it. We will see you in the comments and continue our conversation there. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Here we are, guilty, Corey Richens. No murder weapon, no confirmed drug chain, a death certificate that still says undetermined, and yet the prosecution just got a conviction. Something worked. Let's talk about what, because she looked so innocent. Joining me to do just that, as always, my co-host, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, who, by the way, it's book launch day for him today, and this is out as of today. It's not all about me. Get it wherever books are sold.
We should send it to Corey.
We should. We'd send her an autographed copy, Robin, to the jail. She would love it.
Your next go around, Corey, employ everything that you read in this book.
Exactly.
She'll be baseline.
A totally changed person. If only she read it a few years ago. And Bob Mata, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, defense attorney. Bob, welcome. Let's start here.
Eric,
he told multiple people he thought his wife was trying to poison him 18 days before he died. How much do you think that dead man's warning had on the jury in terms of impact?
I don't think it hurt.
Yeah.
I think if we're going to get down to brass tacks, I think the walk the dog letter did her in, like, overall. But I mean, those kind of dying declarations or, you know, thoughts that your spouse is trying to kill you and putting it out there, to multiple people is going to have an impact, because it at least shows that that's what he was kind of thinking. I mean, the question always becomes, was it said in jest, or was it said, you know, because when you look back and you're thinking, like, after the deed is done, right?
Yeah.
And you're thinking about it and you look back on things, it changes the context, right? So, like, everybody that he would have said that to, even if he had said it, like, in a joking manner, it takes on a much more nefarious tone, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If he ends up dying, and then you kind of rethink it, when in the moment, you might not necessarily think anything of it other than he's just talking shit.
Well, it makes you wonder how much was he trying to, because I believe it was said that, like, the way it was said to friends was kind of in a joking manner. But yeah. you wonder, like, behind Eric, you know, behind, all of us have a mask of some sort to the world, and some are thinner and some are a lot thicker. But I'm thinking Eric might have been a thinner mask person, you know, but behind that mask, that facade of everything's okay, you know. Clearly, behind the scenes, he knew things were up. He moved his assets. He changed the beneficiaries. But it does make you wonder how much behind that mask he's sitting there going, yeah, you know, I'm kind of joking about this. And we all kind of, I know I use humor. I know you use humor, you know, to kind of deal with tough stuff. How much it was really landing with him thinking, yeah, I'm joking about this. But in reality, you know.
Yeah,
that's actually what's happening.
100%.
And so true, because that's also why, you know, everyone can see red flags in hindsight, but in the moment, we never believe the worst in people most of the time. And even though we've been, I mean, we actually had an episode where we even talked about this, all the red flags that weren't missed, they were just rationalized away potentially, except maybe by Eric, until it is too late and everyone does have that hindsight. But Bob, I'm really curious, Bob, we have so many points on this case, on the trial with the defense, the closings. So do you think this was a death by a thousand cuts, or was there any one or two glaring things to you? What do you think it was? And kind of, I won't keep throwing questions in. We'll just go one at a time.
I think I do. Because there was, I mean, again, if I pull the walk the dog letter out of this case, I still think she's probably getting convicted but I don't think she's getting convicted in 2 hours and 40 minutes.
That was crazy.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that that piece of evidence alone was so powerful because it was essentially a confession.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everything that, or it became such a thing that they had to try to tailor their defense around it so that it didn't seem like it was actually a confession.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like, once that was out there, once the state had their hand on it, it then became incumbent upon the defense to say, you know what? The only way around this thing, because nobody's buying that it was, you know, a chapter in a 65-page book that you're writing, is to craft it as this is either the truth or do what I think the defense did. And I wasn't 100% clear as I was listening to closings yesterday, or what I was kind of saying, that I would take that approach wherein I'm saying, look, this is a woman who fully understands what she's facing. This is not, she is aware of all the evidence and what the case is against her, because at that point she had Sky Lazaro and her firm handling the case. Sky was her attorney at the time that this walk the dog letter dropped. And it became the impetus of Sky withdrawing because of conflict in her whole firm, which is entered Nestor and Lewis.
And I want to talk about that, because I need you to refresh me on this. There was something on Twitter the other day. Someone was asked, you had responded to somebody about just this, where it was, no, the original firm, Sky, the whole firm left. Remind me, what the hell happened there? Why did they leave? Do we know the exact details as to why they withdrew from the case?
No, not fully. Not fully. I mean, basically what we had to glean from it is that the claim was that Sky and the firm had a conflict in a different case that was affecting their ability to be able to stay on that case.
Mm-hmm.
But what I recall, and this is on straight recollection, so do not take me to the bank on it.
Sure.
But I recall when the walk the dog letter became exposed, there was this thing that was being said out there that Corey had told people that Sky Lazaro was the one who had cooked the whole thing up. And so, you know, meaning like insinuating that Sky Lazaro, her attorney, was suggesting that they cook up witnesses, which there's no way that Sky Lazaro's doing.
So
that.
It's like she right. was. So if that's true, that is it's par for the course for Corey. She turns on everybody, anything that's going to deflect from her actions. She knows no bounds, including destroying her own defense. I mean, I'm not surprised if that's you know what really went on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Do you think there's all those cuts by a thousand, you know, knives or cuts or whatever, and we have the walk the dog letter. Do you think that the closings that the prosecution did just threw kerosene on the fire? Do you think it was already going to go anyway?
It's funny you ask that. Going into it, you know, but I've got that problem being a defense attorney. So
I know you do. That's right. You'll get excused.
from that lens. And going into the closings, and I don't know if you saw the tweet, Tony, but my mindset was that most of the time, I think the reality is that jurors have already made their decision going into closings. Okay. Mm-hmm. Unless you have a case where it's close.
Yeah.
Or where the evidence isn't overly powerful in terms of actual evidence. Because what this case was an incredibly strong theory, a motive theory case that was impossible for the defense to get over. Because even though they lacked kind of the smoking gun evidence as to the ag murder and definitely as to the attempted murder, the story was so compelling and it fit so well that it would have led the jurors to think, all right, well, either this is the unluckiest woman in the world with this set of circumstances that's surrounding her, that her husband happens to die, right? It kind of the apex of everything raining down on her. The business is, just flailing. You know, she's got this relationship with this dude who she doesn't really care about, who she's using for his handyman skills to get all the work done on all the different properties that she's absolutely desperate to close on in order to keep funding the business. It's like if she's not closing on houses, she can't pay the mortgage payments on all the different properties. They're all going to go into foreclosure. So it's like this cycle was rolling. And then you add in her so desperate for the cash, and she's committing the fraud and, you know, signing up for the life insurance and stealing the HELOC money. It's like you'd have to believe that all of that was going on, and this was just a really, really unfortunate accident timing wise.
So, Bob,
like, how are you getting there?
You are famous for saying to me and other, and rightfully so, sometimes you can't possibly know her. The jury says they did.
Yeah.
You know, so behaviorally, she had all those data points, right? But they had enough data points that they said, we know you well enough.
Yeah, I've got long thoughts on that.
And, I know.
Not you.
No, I know. I mean, the reality, man, is that I was disappointed in the length of time to deliberate a case like that. It's just... And it's not necessarily for Corey's case in general. It's overall, mm-hmm. It's a civic duty that I think that 99.9% of people that are selected for jury duty take very seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, because you've all heard it. You've probably said it. Oh, I got called in for jury duty. Like, no one's happy about getting that thing.
Oh, I'm a freak. I like it.
You're never going to serve on a jury for the rest of your life now that you're doing this show.
Yeah. I mean, look, dude, the reality is everybody ends up enjoying it because it's such a unique experience. There's nothing like doing it. And when you get into the courtroom and the trappings of the court and the weight of what's going on, especially in a criminal case more so than in civil, I feel – unless you've got, because civil's money, when you're talking about freedom in somebody's potential life, it's a heavier weight.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, and there's a lot of weight here. I mean, this is a mother of three children. Granted, there was no real definable care that she showed for these children over the course of this trial in any way, shape, or form.
You don't know her, Tony.
But there wasn't a whole lot that was that wasn't shown that way. I mean, and maybe there is something there. I don't know. But, I mean, that's usually somewhat of a weight on this. You would even know that she had children had it not been like those videos of, the kids are in their bedroom as the body is being wheeled out of the house. Yeah. Do you think jurors, Bob, are getting, and I'm curious, just historically on this, are they getting better at, and it speaks to the amount of time they spent in that room too, at pattern recognition and better at believing the capability of monstrous human beings? I mean, I would say years ago, some of these characters you see, and I think a lot of people go, that's impossible. That's so crazy. That's such an extreme. No one would do this. But I don't know, you see Corey Richens. I mean, if you took the Corey Richens story and said, let's make a Lifetime movie out of it, it'd be like, yeah, let's pull this back a little bit because it goes a bit too far. Nobody's that stupid to do this. Surprise. Yeah. Do you think the juries are just like, there's so many people in the pool now that fit this sort of mold that they're quicker to call them out and don't feel that they need to really debate this and run it into the ground 50 different ways to determine and call a spade a spade?
Yeah, well, I think that there could be some, I don't know if I want to call it desensitization or if it's, just kind of like an actual... I don't.
Almost like the Dateline effect, if you will. Yeah,
I want to give credit to the prosecutors, though, too.
Yeah,
shit out of me. Because every case is different. Every case has its own story. There is no fitting everyone into one kind of box. And like what you're suggesting is that
we're all so exposed to this type of material now, and these stories of people, where it used to be like, oh God, did you hear the movie, this crazy person? Now just go on any internet streaming service and you're going to find 50 true crime shows, all with variations of Corey Richens.
That's what I'm saying. Because we're desensitized to it, doesn't mean that you don't do the work.
Because
here's the thing. And now I'm going to get into my, I'm going to pull out my soapbox and I'm going to stand on it for a minute. But I mean, here's the thing, man. We set up this government with the Constitution for a reason. And the way that it's set up is that, and I think that people sometimes lose sight of the fact that document is set up for us as the citizens to protect us from our government. And I want to make no bones about this, that our government is the prosecutor. It's the cops. That in the criminal justice world, that is the government. Mm-hmm. And we cannot get to the point where we're dealing with a trust me, bro type situation in juries.
Sure.
Because I'm getting to the point where I almost think that professional juries, people that are taught what the standard, what the burden means beyond a reasonable doubt, and people that just do it, that are educated on the system, they're educated on the burdens, what the burdens mean, and then we just let those folks do that for a living. They mm-hmm. literally will be the juries on cases because they've got, you're always going to have that fear of bias, though. Right. I mean, that's going to exist, that therein lies the rub with that. And then you've got to worry about, can anybody get to these people?
Yeah, that's what I'd be starting to worry about. That's where my mind went first on that. It was all right. So now they're going to be bought off.
Right. Those are the concerns, because I could just tell you, T, from having done this for a long time, and Robin, that there was no substantive deliberation that took place in 2 hours and 40 minutes.
They're trying to figure out how to figure out the forms. Went in there long enough to, all right, how do we do these forms? How do we fill them out? We're done. We're set.
Right.
Bob, I'm curious, but kind of riffing on this a little bit, have you seen an evolution in lawyers? I think the juries are seen, I think they are exposed to more of shows like this. There's definitely more out there because, when we were growing up, the only thing on TV was the four channels and there wasn't this.
Yep.
And so our exposure to it was a lot of shock. When we saw cases like this, we were shocked. We're in disbelief. And so oh my God, I'm having flashbacks.
From the headlines.
So now people are going in there and they're actually doing things like we're doing. It's like, hey, I recognize this from this case, in this case, in this case, in this case, he was guilty, in this case, he was innocent. So they're making these connections. But also, have you seen an evolution, though, in the prosecutors as well as the defense attorneys that are better story weavers and able to relate those past experiences maybe than they used to be?
No, I do. I think the evolution, but I think it's more tech driven. Like you saw with Bloodworth closing. I mean, it was a wonderful example of the power of demonstrative evidence. And
because he made it
very easy, and he laid it all out for him to read. Like it was a story, not much less of him telling it, more of him showing it. And he just laid it out, and he did a very good job, and it was a very.
I haven't seen as many closings, obviously, as you have, because that's what struck me about that closing, Bob, was that it was almost like how you go to vote, and there's guys standing out front with the pre-form filled out for you. Hey, just vote like this.
Yeah.
It struck me the same thing. It's like, hey, here's how you guys can fill out the form. Here's all the elements. Just check the box. Is that a standard tactic that he did in the closing, or is that a little more unique?
It was a little more unique. Like the incorporation of the evidence that was presented in the case in the form of being able to do it like that, where you essentially have a PowerPoint presentation, is incredibly powerful, man. Because if you go back in history, to my dad's era, to my early career, I had a pad of paper and bullet points and I had written my closings, but I wasn't reading from anything, and maybe we'd have one or two demonstratives,
right.
Whereas now you can highlight every high point, everything that you think that really struck home or should have struck home with the jury, and you're highlighting it. If you've got contradictions, you're able to put them right there. and say, look, this is how we know she's lying. You know, this, you know, here's the walk the dog letter. And he did his Smugworth translation. That's what I called it. You know, like, so you're looking at what the thing says, and then he's translating through Corey's twisted mind what she's actually thinking, that this is what this really means. It was all really, really powerful. And, you know, and then when you look at the defense's closing and they're throwing up a Monopoly card, a chance card, the get out of jail free card.
I like the statues personally.
Oh, yeah. Well, and like Bloodwurst wasn't completely highbrow because he had the elephant diarrhea one, which was funny, effective in terms of, I always fall back on the old, you know, in describing what circumstantial evidence is. I say, look, you go to bed in the evening. Correct. You look out your window. There's your grass is green. You wake up in the morning. It's covered with snow. You know, it snowed overnight, even though you didn't see it. I thought it was like a really, really effective close for the state. And it was important because what I kind of dipped off, which I have a tendency to do when I was talking about going into these closings, I thought that this was a case where the closings might matter. You know, that if you had people on the fence, these closings could, for either side, push it either way. But again, that's what I'm saying. I'm looking through to a defense lens. I still, as I sit here today, while I believe that she's factually guilty, I still don't think they met their burden as to the ag murder, and definitely not on the attempt murder, you know, because it, like, the burden is high. That was a case that was driven on emotion and it's a theory driven prosecution, meaning that they didn't have a ton of powerful evidence. They had all these little pieces that they were able to put together and create this theory that is incredibly plausible. And when they were able to get from plausible to really, really likely to, yeah, I think that's what happened. I feel pretty confident that happened. When they were able to get their theory locked down by plugging in what evidence they did have to that extent, I mean, it was fait accompli. So, but for me, if, you know, I'm looking at my chat, I'm looking at my Twitter, and it's funny, you know, because it's like you see the people that, you know, were hearing about the Corey Richens case for 3 years and fucking hated her, you know, which is, that's not how we do it. I get how people feel, and I get that people get this weird, bizarre vested interest in a case they have nothing to do with. Mm-hmm. I wish people would take a step back.
I think it, because for so many people, Corey Richens reminds them of people. No, that's what did it for me. That's what sucked me in.
So it's like every case, dude.
There's a lot. Yeah, I mean, but I think if and not everybody, I can't relate to every case, but there's certainly, I think that's the reason why you get a lot of people that dig into some of these, is because they see this, they see a reflection of, insert X case here. In this case, we're talking about Corey Richens, and they see it. They see a reflection of it in their life in some way, shape, or form. Whether it's somebody that they knew or interacted with or whatever, and they feel more connected to it in that way, shape, or form. And I'm not, it's right or wrong. It's just how people react. But that, I think that there's more of that going on. And again, and I think it's also interesting, kind of what I was going back to earlier of just the juries. Are they more apt to understand these cases better? Are they more to believe the depravity of some people? I mean, I'm noticing, like, just some of the language that gets used. Bloodworth used narcissistic injury in his closing arguments. I thought that was interesting. I mean, that's something that, I mean, I don't know that the average person really gets that concept. I mean, unless they listen to, because there's a lot of things that we started talking about on this show that really weren't out there very much. Narcissistic injury was one of them, and so was the hair follicle testing. And I noticed both landed in this trial. Yeah. But I think it's interesting that it's interesting how people will relate to these cases. And I think that connection that they make personally through that relation to their own lives is deeper and greater than it used to be. And I don't know what it says about society, that we're all interacting with more people that are like Corey Richens or not, but I think it's what's going on.
I mean, I wanna maybe.
I don't know. I mean,
look, we've seen the deaths of it, Tony.
Sure.
Yeah. It's one thing to be able to relate to it when it becomes a thing where it appears that somebody has a vested interest when they don't.
Yeah.
It's a different thing. It's one thing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's easy, I think, for women that look that are mothers, and they mm-hmm. see a case where this woman, like at the end of the day, mm-hmm. the disregard for her children above all else.
Yeah.
Because these children have now been left without parents.
Yeah.
And it's all on her. And
it was pretty damning.
And her inability to be able to take into consideration the impact on her children's lives is unforgivable. Right. Yeah. So like I think from that perspective, mm-hmm. I think that it'll draw moms in a way where they'll feel it. They'll feel yeah. that ire, you know, deep inside of them, because they just don't understand how somebody could do that to their kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, but like it gets on a different level, though.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like people like talking about how they hate people they don't know. It's just
sure.
to me, it's a yeah. lot.
Corey Richens was a buffet of wrong, and everybody could kind of pick out what they wanted off the buffet and go, oh, I like salad. Like, I like the pork chops. I like people are like it, she offered a little something to everybody yeah. in a lot of ways. That's the prosecution of Corey Richens. We're going to get into the more of the defense of Corey Richens here. Give us your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube and Substack. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something, but I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris. Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale, from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you can win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's. Online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.